Hello, I'm Andrew Finney, and welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast, a podcast aimed at all nurses or health professionals interested in a research career. This podcast that will run fortnightly will feature nurse researchers from all levels, so PhD candidates, PhD students, postdocs and professors, and occasionally we'll throw in the odd bonus episode. We hope you enjoy it and find it really valuable. Do listen to the end where Eleanor and I do summarise the interviews, and if you get the chance, do click follow where you listen to your podcasts and you'll never miss an episode, and do give us a rating. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Nurse Researcher Podcast, and I'm delighted to say that this week I have Professor Julie Green with me from Keele University. So Julie, I'll let you introduce yourself and your role, and you can perhaps say how we know one another.
Lovely. Thank you, Andrew, and real pleasure to be here with you. So my name is Professor Julie Green, and I am the current head of school for nursing and midwifery here at Keele University. And I have a confession to make. I've worked with you since 2003, maybe.
Yeah, which sounds better than 20 years. But
that's, I thought it sounded better than that. Don't give our ages away.
But that's perhaps what it is. So I know some of your story, but clearly the listener doesn't. And I think it's a fascinating story because it's a clear trajectory from, you know, early career researcher and PhD student right the way through to professorship. And that's really what we're trying to guide people towards, what's achievable on this episode and on this series of the podcast. So to take you right back, I suppose for the listener, it's important to know why you became a nurse in the first instance.
Yeah, and it was something I always wanted to do. And I often reflect on the fact that I had a teacher in primary school I really respected, and she asked me what I wanted to do in the future. And my mum had always worked in healthcare, and I'm nosy. So I loved to go and wonder what was wrong with people and sort of put their past history together. So I said, I want to be a nurse. And Mrs. Turner said, what a waste. You don't want to be a nurse. You need to be a teacher. And it really stuck with me. And I became a teacher. So I trained to be an RE biology and PE teacher, then got a holiday job in a care home. And the day I walked in, it was called Camelot Court locally. It's no longer there now. The day I walked in was just a revelation of that's what I wanted to be. It was the privilege of providing personal care. I loved it. And I actually applied for my nurse training and didn't do my honours year. So I got an ordinary degree and never regretted a minute of it, and loved every aspect of my training. And I guess I always feel that my mum and dad supported me to do an education degree. And I guess coming into education has allowed me to merge the two. So hopefully some of those skills of being a teacher, but those skills of growing nurses for the future. So years later, I saw Mrs. Turner in a hairdresser's and said, she said, what did you end up doing? And I said, I was a teacher, but became a nurse. And she said, oh, nursing's far more rewarding. And I remember thinking, God, if you'd said that when I was about 10, you know, I would have missed clinical grading. I would have been fast tracked. There would have been lots of opportunities. So, yeah, I think when you give somebody a little bit of advice, make sure that it's good advice, because mine was probably a throwaway comment that she was just thinking teaching was wonderful that day. And I, nothing is wasted, though. You grow through every experience.
No, it isn't. But I wonder if that sentiment is still there to some extent. I think of my wife as an A-level teacher, who often says people that want to be a nurse are sort of pushed towards vocational education, towards health and social care, and not considered to be the people that they want to sort of be dynamically pushing through A-levels. I wonder if we haven't perhaps changed that to some extent.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when you look at the grade profile to get a place on a nursing degree course, it's probably 3 Bs. To do midwifery is 3 As. So we really are looking for those academic people. We know that well-educated degree level nurses increase patient safety. We need to be driving people to aspire to be a nurse who are our brightest. You know, I never wanted to do medicine. I always wanted to be at the bedside. I had that privilege of providing care. But we need in that story to tie up that you can be the most intelligent person. It's about the vocation to do the career. And we need bright people who will go on and do research, lead education. and they've got to be our best. And so for somebody to say you'd be wasted as a nurse is something we should never hear, because you're not wasted as a nurse. If you're the most academic, if you're the most clinically savvy person, it's never a waste. So it is a story to tell. And I think every day is a school day. And I came to a conference that you led over at Keele Hall, the SPCR afternoon. And people there spoke of wanting to be a researcher more than wanting to be a clinical nurse. And it was a bit of a revelation to me that we've always expected people to do 20 years on the wards, get to be a ward sister, to have credibility. And one of the girls there that spoke, one of the ladies, had said, I don't want to get to be a ward sister. I want to be a researcher that you can present me with a problem and I can solve it. I don't need 20 years of ward experience. And I think we very much need to embed careers, early careers, in different directions. You don't get a passport that says you're competent after 20 years. We know clinical practice is hard, but we need to have those choices at early career, I think. And that was a real revelation. Sometimes you just hear something and think, gosh, we need to rebadge this. And we're now developing a program, a master's in leadership and research for early career nurses, so that they can hit the ground running, get onto their prof docs, PhDs. Because what we need in nursing is those prof doc and PhD students earlier in their career. So we've got 30 or 40 years of publishing of postdoc research. And, you know, I finished my PhD when I was about 49. And that I haven't got long to do a lot with it. We need people much younger. So we need to change that career structure for people.
And I'm going to take you back a bit. I mean, that's so meaningful what you've said. And I think that's really the Chief Nursing Officer's sense and idea as well with the strategy that was released. But I'm going to take you back to talking about being at the patient's bedside. You ended up at their bedside in their own home. How did that come about? It was district nursing with you.
Yeah, it was. And I enjoyed my pre-registration placement in the community, but qualified, as is often the case, and went to work in a ward on urology. I would have gone anywhere. I had loved every area of my training. So I did about 18 months on a urology ward. But it was then never seen as a first destination for community. And now we're very much working. The Q and I are working to look to say that you don't need to work in secondary care for a couple of years. You can go straight out into the community. But that wasn't the model when I qualified. I then worked on intensive care for about 4 years, did my intensive care course. And then there was an opportunity as a direct entrant to community. So a direct entrant was somebody who went straight on the specialist practice course from their role. So I was a senior staff nurse, went on that program and came out as a district nursing sister. Locally, that's not something that's offered, but I think it's a really great opportunity of bringing leadership from another area out into the community. We have now resold. Community can be your first destination. But there was this opportunity, and lots of people move from critical care to community. I was a bit of a burnt out critical care nurse. I found it devastating, the levels of illness, and almost walked that journey with every family that had a patient in there. But the communication you have in intensive care, you say it, you explain it, you talk to your patient, whether they're conscious or not. It's very much like the community, those communication skills. I'd go out to 95-year-old people who would never see anybody else. If I didn't get it right, we wouldn't hear from them again. It was about communicating, doing what you say you do. And I think they are the transferable skills. So I did my direct entrance, 1 year program, and loved it. Loved the privilege of being in somebody's home, that engaging them in some level of self-management. And I worked in a very, very poor inner city area where people had nobody, you know, and they've had pictures of my kids on their mantelpiece. You very much became part of their lives because they may well not have been seeing anybody. And that's what really inspired me about building relationships, about supporting people where they wanted to be. And that's so much more the case now. We care for people who are more acutely ill at home, at end of life. It's such a privilege to be in somebody's home. I've been to more funerals. I've been to lots of things because those families see you as part of their family. You know, you support them through the most tragic events, and it is a privilege to do it. So although I left and came into education, my passion has always been educating specialist practitioners to deliver the very best care out in the community. And it's still my passion now.
Yep. And then you'd got quite a lot of experience there in that community setting. What finally gave you that little nudge to bring everything together and move into that educational role, that first post at Keele University?
I don't think it was actually a conscious move into education. And I think when people, nurses, reflect on their career, sadly, we often have poor experiences of where we work. And I felt quite intimidated by a manager and felt quite bullied. And I felt in a situation I needed to move from that role. So I was quite saddened to leave. But often it's the case that I think nursing gives us many careers within a career. So it was an opportunity to bring those education skills with my nursing skills. So applied for a job at Keele University. I've now been here 21 years almost. But the role that was available was around teaching clinical skills. And it was quite an innovative role all those years ago, that you would lead all of the clinical education within the nursing programme. So you would teach the theory associated with the skill and the skill. And it was sort of, I suppose, an interim point between delivering care clinically and solely lecturing. So, excuse me, for 2 years, I delivered skills along with colleagues and yourself joined that team. And that was a privilege, really, because students just wanted more of it. You know, you could never give them enough clinical skills and they remain passionate in their training. And it was providing that environment to learn a skill with no risk to the patient. So we know that venipuncture on a simulated arm is not identical to taking blood, but it was learning that procedure, doing the communication alongside it to give confidence that when you do actually do that to a patient, you know what you're doing. And it was just great. And an opportunity to have fun, to engage students in a safe environment. So I felt that 2 years was my sort of interim move from working clinically into working academically. And I never regret that 2 years. I think it was, it developed many of my skills, delivering things 6 times back to back after each other. But you become quick. And you become entertaining. I think very much being an educator is about keeping people's attention, them listening, a bit of humour in there, but being supportive and safe. So loved it.
I'm finding it hard not to chuckle as you describe that back, because I would describe us probably at the end of an 8-hour day of doing repeated 1-hour sessions as probably being punch drunk towards the end of some of them. Yeah. And that it did sort of.
You never know who you'd said it to.
No.
You know, and then you'd repeat something and they'd all look at you and you'd think, oh no, that wasn't the last group. But yeah, good fun.
Have I said this to you at all 4 times? I can't quite remember. Yeah. So I don't normally guide people as to what I want them to talk about because I don't know them as well as I know you. But with your PhD, tell us how you got the PhD and tell us how you held out for a question that was of your passion, because I think that's important to the people listening.
Okay. So at the time, we had a wonderful head of school who had a real research hat on. So I'd worked here probably 7 or 8 years without really a focus on research. And I do think we're very much on the back foot with nursing and midwifery research, and we need to catch up. So we had a head of school with a very very thorough research focus. And she worked with our primary care colleagues and gave some opportunities to do some research. So I applied for that and went along to present what I wanted to research. And I actually went with a presentation around virtual learning, which was quite early in that journey towards simulation. And I thought that would tick some boxes. And really at the back of my mind, it was an opportunity to get some funding for a couple of years. And I thought, I'm not going to get it, but that'll keep the wolf from the door. And I'll just say, well, I applied, I didn't get the funding, which is tempting fate in some ways. So I went and presented about this virtual learning. And they said, oh, you know, we like that topic, but you don't sound very passionate about it. But if you could do anything you wanted to do, what would it be? And I'm passionate about quality of life for patients. And I think we need to really ensure that all of our visits to patients are not a tick box. They're not task orientated, that we really involve them. And my passion was wound care. And I said, what I'd really like to do is to look at the quality of life of people who have chronic venous leg ulcers and ensure that they lead the consultation, that we meet their needs. And they said, wow, that the passion you had then was much, you know, that was very impressive. So they offered me the funding to do that. And then as that transpired, it became morphed into some established PhDs I could do. And I didn't want to do that. I really, wound care isn't particularly an area that is aligned to the university's interest areas for research. But I knew that I would only succeed if it was something I was passionate about. So I held out and I got the opportunity to do that PhD. Then it really actually was focused on the fact I went to see somebody with a student and she had had chronic venous leg ulcers for 60 years. And all throughout your education about leg ulcers, you know that they recur, you know, there is a longevity to it. But I'd never heard somebody for 60 years. She was now early 80s, carers four times a day with bilateral bandages. And on her wedding photograph on the wall, she had bilateral bandages. And it really had made me think that all of that 60 years, they'd healed, they'd recurred. She'd been a new wife, a mother, a widow, a grandmother, and had always had leg ulcers. They had defined her life. But had we ever gone in to say, if we can't heal them, how can we make your life better? So that was the thing that really underpinned, called her Nellie. It wasn't her real name, but it changed my view of how we should be dealing with people. And I did that piece of research and developed a tool to focus a consultation exactly on what the patient wanted. And it's amazing that something as trivial as a 15-minute visit to somebody and a bit of a chat can actually give you that research idea that will really change people's experience.
Did you find the academic side of the PhD a steep learning curve, or was it something that you felt that you could control and almost develop your expertise as you were working through? Because I think we still have a lot of nurses out there who tend to think PhDs are for other people and that they wouldn't be able to sort of manage at that level.
I mean, I think academically, you know, I'm relatively bright, but I'd always found research a little bit dry in terms of taught modules. So I'd probably done my best. I'd done a master's, a PG cert, but I'd always sort of RPL'd my research out of it. But the model of a PhD when I did it was that you did 180 credits and you had to do the assessment for that as well. So it's a little bit like the professional doctorate model that we've got now, because you had to complete those modules alongside your study. So I felt from that point of view, I was very grounded. I did quantitative data analysis. I did in vivo and qualitative analysis. So I did all of those modules and became passionate about research. So that was okay. The challenge I had was that I was doing a lone PhD in a topic area that didn't align to the university and felt very isolated. So sometimes, you know, I was lucky enough to have some time bought out, but there wasn't that cohort going through, if you like. As a school now, we fund lots of people to do professional doctorates. And what that gives is that cohort for 2 years. So you're still doing your modules and you're learning, but you have a group. And if you one day look and think, oh, God, what am I doing today? You can message somebody and there's a cohort going through. So I guess that was the loneliness of having a topic area that sat outside of our expertise, which was very musculoskeletal focused at the time for the university. So the academic was OK. And the fact that I had to complete those modules and do the assessment was good. And it really enabled me to learn. It was just a little bit of a lonely journey.
Mm. And what's been interesting to see it as I've seen your research progress, even from your PhD research, has been the impact of some of it. And we found it difficult, haven't we, in nursing often to be able to demonstrate the impact of our research. Do you want to tell us perhaps what your proudest piece of work is and what you feel has had the most impact from your own research?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a result of the PhD, I developed with patients a quality of life checklist, and it's had a few iterations. So the initial one that I developed was quite wordy. And then I worked with a learning disability group who will analyze patient information. And they were wonderful. And they just really cast a completely different eye on that, simplified it. And I worked with them in a workshop. So my first question was, can you mobilize as you did before your wound? So they were saying, well, I couldn't mobilize before, so I wouldn't answer that one. And so they really guided me to simplify the questions. So it's had a number of iterations. I completed my PhD in 2013, so 10 years ago, and it is still being used as a paper document, as a quality of life tool in hundreds of consultations on a daily basis. More recently, one of the chief nurse fellows presented it at one of their meetings, and it's now been taken forward and developed into an app. I always wanted it to be an app, but there are considerable issues around GDPR if you're not NHS based. So as a university, we couldn't host all of that personal information. So there is now an organization that is an NHS aligned organization, and they're creating it as an app. I will have access to the anonymized data, but it will collect data, and any organization that wants it will go through that organization. So I have nothing to do with the data, but I will get that data. And what that will provide is some linkage in questions. So in the completion of it, I asked the patient to rate their quality of life, 0 to 100, quite simple, but it will allow us to track that with the other sort of activities of daily living questions. So if you sleep in a chair, you've got poor diet, what's the impact on quality of life? And I believe that scoring is really important to allocate visit time. So I saw an elderly lady with the most awful chronic venous leg ulcers, but a real internal locus of control. So she was like, you know, quality of life's 95. I'm fine. You know, I go out shopping, I'm doing fine. And I saw another lady who was only 40, very small leg ulcers, but she rated her quality of life as 0. So if I was allocating visits, that lady with the quality of life as 0 would need more time allocating so that they could explore the mental health issues that she was suffering from. Whereas the person with the quality of life of 95, you could be quite task orientated. She was rocking it. The biggest inconvenience to her was having her dressings done because she wanted to be doing stuff and elsewhere. So I have been around a bit and presented around quality of life scoring, determining visit time. But what I developed has certainly morphed and is still morphing into other stuff. So that is the joy, really, to think. I didn't finish that. We always had a model in nursing that you late career, you did your PhD and that was it. Yeah, I've climbed that mountain and I'm done. For me, it's seeing that there's still progress, still work to do around that. So that's the pleasure in it, I guess. Hopefully that answered your question.
It certainly did answer the question, Julie, and I can see how it's not just enhanced, you know, the way that you've been able to have impact on other people involved in wound care and those sorts of things, but it has the PhD enhanced your career? Because I'm thinking this was always a big component to being able to get to professorship, but I know that with your professorship you demonstrated that new model as well, where you could bring expertise from your education and other things. So it's a different route to professorship. That would be nice if you explain that to people as well, I think.
Yeah, and I think Kiel is quite innovative in what it sees as routes to professorship. And I don't know that every other HEI has similar models. So completing my PhD, and I've always carried on and published and got involved in other projects, but haven't really pursued a big postdoc career, because I've gradually sort of been promoted within the ranks of leadership within the school, which is something I'd very much wanted to do. So I became a director, and then there was a cross-faculty opportunity as Dean of Education. And I think we're very humble as nurses, and you never quite see that an opportunity is for you. And I've been very lucky to be nudged by people that I possibly wouldn't have thought of, this is a route that I could go, whereas other people have said, have you thought of going for that? So I had this opportunity of Dean of Education, and then the head of school role came up, and that's very much brought me back to nursing. And I guess in terms of my professorial role, it isn't based on my research returnability or the quality of my publications. Mine is based more on my professional profile and the impact I've had nationally. So that's probably within my Queen's Nursing role. I've driven a lot of change with district nursing, and my professorial position is as the only professor of district nursing. So it's given me lots of opportunity, but it's not based on a research career. It's based on my leadership career. But it's given me opportunities to mould the position of the specialist practice programme, the importance of district nursing. But it is those other roles. So the Royal College of Nursing, I've been closely involved with ever since I started my training. But the last sort of 15 years or so, I've been active within forums. I've been chair of the District and Community Nursing Forum. I've been the West Midlands representative on the Professional Nursing Committee. And now I'm the West Midlands Council member. And that's where I feel I've thrived in terms of national representation, having a voice, supporting people, and often being driven by other people. So it's a great and innovative model. You don't need a PhD to be a prof at Keele. It really acknowledges that that external facing support for the profession is valuable, and there are many routes to being a professor. So I'm very proud to be the only professor of district nursing, but I see my role for the rest of my career of trying to lead and get other people in the positions that they need to be to take nursing and midwifery forward. So great opportunity. Every day is a learning day and a challenge.
And really, really unique to have that, the educational side, the research side. So you've brought all of the expertise to that professorship. What do you think, or what would be your message for community nurses, district nurses now who are thinking, well, is there hope for me to do a clinical academic career? How do I start on this ladder? What would be the advice you'd give to people?
I mean, there are quite a few people who get in touch. I think the professional doctorate model for people who've perhaps not been in education for a number of years, it's a really good route. It's got that cohort that I mentioned, but also it reinvigorates your knowledge around research and leadership and what your study might look like. So our model of professional doctorate, at the end of your two taught years, you'd have done your literature review, you'd know what your methods were, you would have done a pilot, you would progress and then be in your study. So that positions people well. And I think for people who are a bit nervous about their research knowledge, that's a great way of getting upskilled and being on a programme. I think what we haven't got are embedded clinical academic careers. And I think a lot of people are working at a rate of knots day to day and can't look beyond that to see what a career might look like. And I don't know from a HR perspective whether we've really got that tied up, who employs, who seconds, and not disadvantaging the people that do it. And I think we need to up our game with that. And we do an awful lot of close working with our local trusts to try and enable people. But I guess for me, if you're a community nurse somewhere and you're thinking, I need to solve all of these problems and this is what I want in the future, is to get in touch with your local HEI, get involved in subgroups that discuss those sorts of things. So we have our primary community and district nursing research subgroup that anybody nationally can join. You don't need to be linked to Keele. You don't need to be coming to Keele to do anything in the future. But come and talk to people of a like mind who can advise you whether your areas of interest are viable and what route you could take. It's not an easy fix, and we know because we're battling that with different people, but we do have a chief nurse who has research very much front and centre on her agenda. We have the Royal College of Nursing that are reinvigorating their offer to support around that. So it's a good time to be thinking a research career or a clinical academic career is something I would want for the future. So basically talk to people, root those people out, and align yourself to people who are on that journey that you see that you would want to go.
And in sort of a sense of nursing confidence, you've talked there a little bit about fortunate to do this or being in the right position. Other people won't have heard the episodes that I've recorded so far, but there's lots of sense of nurses almost feel like serendipity played a key part, or, you know, they were just in the right place at the right time, or I was lucky enough to. We've sort of got to lose that, haven't we, in nursing? Because I think if this was a podcast for medics, they'd feel they deserved the things that they got, yeah, and they'd earned the right to do them, and they were almost born to do them. And with nursing, we've got to push us up, haven't we? Push the confidence up to we're where we are because of what we've achieved, not despite what we were.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we've always got that, haven't we? We did it as a team. It wasn't really me that did it. And I remember working with some medics and submitting something, and he was like, no, it's you. You've got to push yourself forward. And I think that is because we work so well as a member of the team. We almost don't want to detract from it for someone else. Oh, no, we did it together. We need to change that. We need to, you know, take opportunities. And I think there are many careers within nursing. I think you can move around and within midwifery, but we tend not to plan ahead and think I'll do this strategically and this is where I want to be. We tend to let it happen to us. And I think we need that model of coaching those incoming people to do earlier PhDs and prof docs and really engage in that career. And that is having a mentor, perhaps having somebody who is along that journey. And I'm sure many of the people you've interviewed and you yourself are very keen to mentor people and give some time back. The biggest thing for me is when I retire is that there are good people coming through. We've got a couple of pre-reg nurses who have done wonderful projects, recently shortlisted for the Student Nursing Times Awards. Listening to them presenting on our International Nurses Day actually reinvigorated me to think that nursing and midwifery are in safe hands with the students and the qualified nurses that are coming through. We just need to believe it and own our careers.
Yeah, absolutely. And a really positive message. So on that note, taking you back through the reflections of your career, and I'll ask you this predominantly about research. If you had your time again, would you do anything differently?
I think I would have. I worked for 20 years within the NHS before I engaged in higher education. And then I worked there for 6 years before I engaged in research. My children were young, and I do think that there are challenges, and my first role is being a mum. But I do remember that sitting working with my daughter, who was about 7, next to me. And you do it to inspire them as well. I've put many hours in my own time. And I always remember Laura once saying, when's yours due in? And I said, oh, about 5 years. And she said, well, I don't know why you're worried. Mine's in tomorrow. But I hope that I've set in my children an ethos that you work hard and you take opportunities, you take risks, and you will achieve. Sometimes it's a circuitous journey, isn't it? We're going in circles. We come round. But you will get there in the future. And I don't know if that answered your question then, I think.
It's certainly a brilliant answer. And it does bring it back to often that we have to have that balance. Our first episode with Gina Higginbottom, she talked about having to be a mum and do that. And family first, isn't it? That's the way people should view these things. And that doesn't mean you can't progress your career. So a wonderful message, Julie. And I think a nice way to end the podcast. So thank you for your time.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to the Nurse Research Podcast, and I hope you enjoyed the Julie Green episode. And here I am joined by Eleanor Hovard again. So thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you, Andrew. It's great to be back.
And last week or the week before, we had Professor Kelvin Morley, somebody that you'd worked with quite closely. And I've worked with Professor Julie Green from before she was Dr. Julie Green, you know, when she was a lecturer, and somebody that I worked with as a clinical skills lecturer back in 2003. So I've known her a long time, but what are your impressions of her when you heard about the sort of position she's at now as a professor and, you know, working in that role?
Yeah, so you can clearly hear the impact that she's had around academic leadership. And interesting, you know, she's still the only professor of district nursing? Are there any
others? I believe so.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? But obviously we need, you know, to encourage more nurses from that specialty to develop clinical academic careers as well. I think she hit on some really important points too, around clinical academic careers not being embedded generally, the difficulties around contracts, and partly why clinical academic careers aren't embedded, although there is work, you know, being done around this at the moment. So hopefully we'll see an improvement in the future. She also speaks of the importance of having a chief nurse now as well, that's front and center, that can also concentrate on the development of clinical academic careers. So I could really feel her sense of passion around developing others. And she spoke about the timing, the current climate within the nursing landscape as being good for developing clinical academic careers, especially on the back of the CNO strategic plan for research being published as well. And again, somebody else that highlighted, I think probably most of the people that you've interviewed so far, the professors have highlighted how important it is to connect with people, align with others on their journey. But something else she also pointed out around, you know, nurses perhaps not having the same confidence in academia as perhaps our medical colleagues have had as well. And that there's been a model of mentorship and missing role models in clinical academic careers too, which we're all working towards, or we're working towards improving that, aren't we? And partly why, you know, you're doing these podcasts is to share the stories of potential role models for others. Yeah, so some really interesting points there, and certainly comes through about her interests in developing others.
And, you know, in the interest of time, sometimes you can't delve too much into some of the questions. I think one thing that Julie highlighted that probably we've not heard of before is something early that she mentioned in the interview, which I didn't write to skip over. She mentioned she felt a culture of bullying in her community nursing role. I'm definitely not going to say community nursing, but certainly in the role that she was in. And the time was right to move into sort of academia and move out. And I think it's quite brave to mention that. It clearly hasn't held her back. And, you know, other people might feel, you know, those sorts of cultures and not know how to open up or how to speak to people. So I was glad that she did that. And I don't know the details of it, but it was brave to do so. But equally quite brave to talk about that. Well, again, she didn't consider it brave, but I thought it was brave at the time to take on a PhD in an area of great interest to her. And that's where her passion was, wound care. But not one to the research institute with which she was working. So we were both in the same research institute for our PhDs where they were registered. And it was a research institute of primary care, but its main focus was musculoskeletal health. So Julie probably felt quite isolated in that PhD, having to do that alone. And although she might have been able to have support from people methodologically, she certainly didn't have a great deal of the clinical expertise. She had to bring that to the table herself. She did have Professor Rebecca Jester, if I remember rightly, as a clinical nursing supervisor who could help. But I think Julie's passion for wound care has always stood out. You know, she was very passionate with the teaching of it and made it very entertaining. She's very, very charismatic as a lecturer and brings a lot of fun whilst learning is there at the same time. So she always used to scare people to death with the pictures of larval therapy and these terrible wounds and all the things that, you know, if you needed to turn away, wound care wasn't for you. Ooh. So she always got the message across. But it was one of the things that I discussed with her maybe 4 or 5 years ago was the difficulty of impact in nursing. And I think Julie felt at the time that although she'd got this, she'd got the impact because she was making big changes with her wound care app, with the tools that she'd got for that. She'd got real engagement, real sort of implementation going ahead with the things that she was doing nationally. But the output, the journals that she'd submitted in were probably seen as the lesser journals from an impact factor point of view. And I think she was very quick to learn that actually, how can she base her impact story on anything if REF wants the impact factor of the papers or the papers to be X or Y, and maybe her papers hadn't got that impact factor because they're purely read by nurses and therefore they weren't given that sort of platform. So she's been very good at sort of encouraging people to publish in the right places and actually, you know, get it to the discipline as well. She's one of the first person I heard talk about, you know, develop your discipline, you know, as well as worrying about citations and we all want impact, but she knew she was making impact, even though perhaps her publications didn't give her the platform to show that through things like REF. So she's been quite trailblazing in that setting. And I think done great things with that kind of research in that area. And really, I think empowered community nurses nationally to think there is something that they can do now academically and clinically academically, as well as just being the person that's, you know, at the doorstep and in the house and working with people face to face, that actually they can have more of a strategic impact with that yeah. patient set and in the community. So I think district nurses or community nurses, whatever label we want to give them, I think are very proud of Julie, and she makes them feel like she's done it collectively for them. And with her roles quite senior in the RCN, and then in the Queen's Nursing Institute. She is a real role model for people. And so although she now will say that she has smaller roles in research as a professor, because she's a head of school and has got a very strategic role, she's always got her finger on the pulse of what's going on, you know, at the level of clinical care, as well as undergraduate and postgraduate education and research and scholarship. She's very, very sort of on the ball with it all. So she is a role model for people, and I hope that comes across in the interview.
Yeah, I do think that did really come through, her particular interest in developing more strategic leadership role. And it's great that there's an example out there for other aspiring community nurses as well to understand, you know, how clinical care can inform a question, a research question in the community. And also, I think, you know, she did mention, which has come up a few times in conversations I've had the last sort of few weeks, the professional doctorate model. Not something I'm overly familiar with, but interesting that it does come up quite a lot in community and primary care as well. So she obviously tries to think of the varied sort of options for people working in those areas where it can be more challenging to develop a clinical or an academic career.
I think there are, based on the context of where you work and the support and opportunity that you have, some people will feel the PhD is the right route for them, and others will feel that they need the professional doctorate and they need that modular approach and that year by year structure. And there's no right or wrong way. I think we know that a PhD is research training, and I would always advocate for that, because that should be the start of a career. Prof doc has got the very central focus on the research element of it, but it gives you that broader educational base of what you're doing on the build up. I suppose what we aren't at the stage yet where we're doing comparisons of the two, and whether we look at the impact of people who've done a prof doc compared to a PhD. But then again, do we need to do comparatives? You know, if they're impactful in their own setting with their own questions, do we need to be comparing? You know, do we need to put them up against one another? If they're successful for whoever, you know, chooses whichever pathway, then maybe that's okay.
Yeah, I suppose the impact on patient outcomes is something that maybe could be looked at. But I guess, you know,
I'm sure somebody will do it. I'm sure they will. We've got a big enough cohort. It's a cohort study waiting, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so absolutely. We'll see how we go. Absolutely.
On that note, I think we can probably draw this one to a close, Eleanor.
Great. Thank you again, Andrew.
Thank you for your time again. I'll speak to you soon.
Take care.